think of the most horrific crime against the United States of America, it had nothing to do with gun ownership. It was somebody who used an airplane to massacre.
The lady say, I'm free and I'm proud to be an American and I don't owe anybody anything. My cars are paid off. My house is paid off. I'd like to see just how free you are, lady, if you don't pay your taxes on the property that you own. How free are you really when you're in that cage? How free are you? How free are you, despite the fact that you paid for your car, how free are you if you don't get it registered? How free are you if you get stopped because you rolled a stop sign? You get exposed for not having registered your car. Right to travel? I don't think so. Everything we have here in the United States of America, they're all privileges. We have the privilege to bear arms. Sometimes. But sometimes not. The government decides when we can exercise that privilege.
It's Feline Fury Time.
Hi, freedomizers and friends. This is Tiger Lily. Thank you for tuning in. This is Tiger Lily's Freedom Roar on Freedomizer Radio. If you're listening live, it is 6:04 p.m. Pacific Time on June 3rd, 2012. A year ago today, I was helping bring to this world my grandchild, Ethan. Today is his birthday. We celebrated it yesterday with a piñata. It's very interesting because my son-in-law is of the Mormon persuasion and he's from Chile. And Chileans don't like Mexicans. I did not realize that. And I kind of had an idea about, you know, there's a little bit of conflict. I know even in Mexico, the northerners can't stand the southerners and vice versa. The people from the south think that the north people from the north are tightwads. And the people from the north think that the people from the south are rude. So you got the whole Yankee Confederate thing going on in Mexico. And there's all sorts of prejudices from in between the various Spanish-speaking countries. And, you know, we need to get rid of all of that silliness. Bill, is that you?
It's me. How are you?
Yay! Great! How are you?
Yay! Can you hear me? I tried
yes,
Skype,
I
but
can.
It didn't work.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's quite all right.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
What have you been up to?
Well, you described it. My wife finished editing my book, so now I'm going to be doing the line galleys and getting it ready for e-publishing. I won't be publishing it in any kind of hard form, like paperback or hardback. I'm going to publish simply by e-publishing on Kindle and hopefully some Mac platforms, too. And I'm getting ready for Porkfest. And I'm also in college working on my master's, and that takes up my time. And, of course, I have a ranch here. I have a day job. I've been rather busy.
It sounds like it. A master's? Oh, my gosh. When I went, I thought when I joined the Marine Corps back in 1979, the only reason, I shouldn't say the only reason, but it was the travel, the adventure, and especially getting out of under my Mexican father's thumb, I joined because I wanted an education. And I had a few college courses, and then I ended up getting married and knocked up and all that crap, and my whole world came caving in. And I thought, well, I'll never see that again. But then I ended up getting a 4-year degree and being a registered nurse. And I'll tell you what, I had almost a 4.0 grade point average just to get into that prestigious college of nursing. And I bet you, I don't know this for a fact, but I bet you I graduated at the very, 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 very bottom of my class because I did not want to be a nurse and I just scraped by with a family and with all the stuff that I had going on and with a part-time job. I don't know how people do it. And I, looking back, I'm thinking that was way overrated, but I did make a ton of money as a nurse while I was a nurse. And so what motivates you to get a master's degree, Bill?
Well, it's just, you know, since I can't do, neither you nor I can try to pursue liberty and freedom on a full-time basis and get paid an appropriate amount of money. So I have to improve the prospects of increasing my income by increasing, you know, both my performance on my day job and what I can do by adding credentials to my resume. So It's basically simply awesome. Filthy lucre as a mercenary in a capitalist economy.
Sounds great. Well, the reason I have you on here is, well, because I love you to death. I love your philosophies, and I've learned so much from you and from being from the posters on your blog, which you're the founder of ZeroGov.com, and I happen to be a moderator for the COP section of the forum, and that's fun to look at. And yeah, and it's a blast. But you wrote, and you constantly write articles that are so eye-opening and compelling. And the one that really caught my eye, and you've since written a few more, which are, they're all great. But one that really caught my eye, you titled it,
It's about the American Aboriginals and the genocidal campaign that the U.S. government has waged on them since the 17th century. So, yeah.
Right, and you started it with saying that you despise the term Native American. Why is that?
Well, I do, because Lily, frankly, you and I are Native Americans if we were born here, but it doesn't make us Aboriginal. So, from an anthropological perspective, if we're trying to practice specificity in our language, we have to be clear on that. Which is why I refer to them as Aboriginal Americans, because they are the original Americans who apparently came over on the Bering Sea land bridge between Alaska and the Siberian Peninsula millennia ago, which is why, you know, American Aboriginals tend to look rather Asiatic in their features and some of their customs and such.
Right. And you wrote this paragraph that said, beset by government largesse that has largely subsidized sloth, alcoholism, and slavish dependency on welfare transfers, they are the poster child for how a government can quite literally destroy a sliver of humanity through a dependency that poisons the soul and eradicates any notion of independence. Stéphane Molyneux, I think he's going to go down in history as one of the Aristotles of our time. He is just a brilliant
philosopher. Well, I think Stéphane is terrific. I agree.
And he talked about in one of his podcasts how he used to be a miner up in Canada, and he saw what the government did to the Aborigines Canadians. And he said, if you want to see what government does, go to one of these places, because it was just, he made it sound so ghetto and so horrific, and everybody dependent on the government and becoming alcoholics. What is your opinion about all of this?
Well, I'll tell you, I was struck by the fellow who did Supersize Me. I can't recall his name, but he has a program on television and occasionally on Netflix streaming or DVD. We'll watch some of the stuff, and he'll spend 30 days doing something like 30 days working at a minimum wage. Well, in one of these shows, he spent 30 days working on the res. Well, I forget what the reservation is. I think it's in either Arizona or Nevada, as a matter of fact. And he's making $2.25 an hour because he's working at a tire shop there. They can have less than minimum wage paid to their employees because they have special dispensation to do so. What struck me was the horrific poverty on this reservation that he demonstrated time and again throughout the program. But guess what? Guess what comes up that shows the opposite of that? It's your friend and mine, the cops.
Oh.
A $60,000 SUV with tribal police authority in it. You know, and they're kitted out with all the latest stuff, and they stop some of the Aboriginals in a car. Because apparently, and I hope I got this right, because this is what I gathered from the program but was not able to corroborate it, you're not allowed to drink on the reservation. Because they figured that in order to eradicate a wrong like that, you just make it illegal and you'll jail people for becoming alcoholics or whatever the case may be. But what a contrast that was. Here you have this deeply impoverished Aboriginal reservation where the Indians are just having a hellish time of making their way because they've been robbed of a whole lot of that stuff that makes people struggle and scrape to do great things in their lives because they're subsidized. Now, maybe that's an overarching generalization to say that, but from the Indian reses that I've seen, especially and you've probably gone to the same ones through northeastern Arizona, it's horrible seeing the way those people live. And for instance, you'll go to casinos and one thing that you'll notice too is that a lot of the folks who are working there are morbidly obese. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, just they are, because I look around in society today, and my wife's a nutritionist, And she tells me, you know what, I read these statistics again and again, where that more than 60% of all Americans are considered obese, and a subset of them are considered morbidly obese. And, of course, that's because of cheap carbohydrates. You know, right. The FDA has lied to such a large extent. They say that carbs, wheats, and sugars and things like that, that's at the top of their half-century-long food pyramid, and that's what's destroying a lot of us. You know, what we're doing, Lily, right now, and this is my fault, is we're going all over the map because you tend to do that to me. Here I am talking about nutrition, and we're talking about the aloes, but in the end, what it means is that I can't think of a more appropriate test case for people who are government supremacists to look at this and find out how humans can literally be wrecked and probably eradicated from the planet as a result of the government taking care of their every need, supposedly.
Oh, tell me about it. And it's, I'm broadcasting from San Antonio. I don't remember if I mentioned that.
I saw that today.
And, and I came here on my motorcycle, open carrying, except for in Texas, you can't open carry, but I open carry through Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico. And right there, right as I was getting into New Mexico at the bottom of Arizona somewhere, I stopped in to get some gasoline and there was a Native American there who saw my gun and asked me if I was a cop. I mean, an Aborigines American. And I said, hell no. I am not only not a cop, I hate cops. The only reason I have my gun is to keep criminals and cops away from me. And he had a whole bunch of Aborigines Americans in his car, and they're all like, you know, cheering me on and saying, yeah, we hate the police. And I mean, they really dislike the cops. It really freaked me out. But how dare the United States, how dare we encroach in their lives? I mean, but they've let it, just like the rest of us, we've let the government take over. We look to them as our salvation, and then, you know, we have so many unintended consequences that those unintended consequences are going to be the death of us. And the FDA, I hate the FDA. As you know, I used to be a nurse, and there is just no excuse in this country that we can't go get our own damn antibiotics without getting a doctor's permission slip. And what about the marijuana? So we'll talk about that. I don't want to get sidetracked. You know me and my bunny trails. But
what we could do is, you know what? We can get sidetracked the entire show because you and I always have a lot to cover. And one thing I wanted to mention as a tangent is I listened to your preview of your show tomorrow about the fellow who's coming in to talk about cops. Of course, on Tiger Lily's show, you're always talking about cops.
Yep.
I'll tell you, one of the great unsung tragedies in this country is prison rape.
Oh.
Think about this. Again and again in the media, or even your neighbors, maybe even some of your friends and acquaintances, they'll say, well, they'll get what they deserve in prison. Really? Really? So you're saying that the wink, wink, nod, nod, looking the other way by corrections officers, prison guards, the wardens, the entire correctional system, and of course the cops joking about it on the street that, well, it'll be an unpleasant experience for you when you become Bubba's cellmate or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
What they're doing when they're saying that is they're actually saying, not only are we going to put you in prison for what is most likely a nonviolent offense and most likely a malum prohibitum crime, which is, but the government says it's wrong, not necessarily wrong, but the government says it's wrong, but we're going to make sure that in addition to your sentence, you're going to be fearful for your sexual sovereignty while you're in prison, and we're going to look the other way because we consider that a fringe benefit to our torture mindset to
yep.
allow you to do that. It is just horrific in my mind that we are a country that tolerates that, but you know, again, look where we live. We live in a country that has codified torture publicly since 2002, where you have presidential findings and legal manipulation at the White House level, what I like to call the awful office, OFFAL, at the awful office level, where they have said, yay and barely, if we don't conduct the really heinous torture here, we'll outsource them to countries that do, like Saudi Arabia or some of the other darker nations out there that do that kind of thing. you know, torture is a matter of fact. I mean, you've covered the Fullerton thing, what happened with that young homeless man.
Mm-hmm.
If that's not torture, I don't know what is.
That was an abomination. And I covered that story, a follow-up to that story, and there were people on the chat that they were absolutely horrified. I don't know that they had even heard about the Fullerton situation, but I was able to get some of the... you know, the RT, they do some pretty good coverage to expose the police state.
Yeah.
And, you know, I downloaded it in clips to evaluate and talk about what they were talking about. And the people were just aghast listening to what was going on. But this is something that mainstream media does not cover. It's all hush hush. And it's just
a you know, part of that, too, is the cop fetishism and hero worship in the media. And I was talking to a friend the other day, Lily, and I think you and I have touched on this. Think about this. If it weren't for cops, how could politicians do anything, either in this nation or any other dark place on earth? If they didn't have a Praetorian Guard, if they didn't have people willing to do their dirty work in order to find, kidnap, cage, maim, and kill their subjects, no matter whether it's Obamacare or a war overseas, or whatever the fact is, unless they have cops, they cannot maintain the prison states that we live in today.
Exactly. And I don't think that there's a show that's gone by where I don't quote you. As my friend Bill Buepert, the founder of ZeroGov.com, says, if it wasn't for police officers, politicians couldn't take away our liberties. I heard you say that on Mac's show.
Peter Mack, yes.
He was on. I heard you say that, and I've been quoting you over and over and over because that is the truth. And talking about jails and stuff, you know, I was in jail for 24 hours. You know that whole story. But
oh, my gosh, I did. I followed that.
Oh, but I'll tell you what. That was the one thing that I feared more than anything. I was afraid to go to jail. Of course, it was just a holding tank, and everybody reminds me that's not really jail, yada, yada, yada. But that was my biggest fear. And now that I've gone through that, they've like created a monster out of me because I do not fear going back into the holding tank again, ever. I will never fear it. And one of the things that I've been thinking, like how to screw with the system, like, for example, the nurse asked me if I was allergic to anything, and I said no. And she was an evil nurse from hell. There's got to be a special place for those bitches. But she said, are you on any medications? And I said, well, I take Xanax to sleep sometimes. And she goes, well, you're not getting any Xanax here. I mean, it's like I wasn't even asking for it, you know? And so then... And so they gave me a TB test, which is under the skin, it pops up and I watched somebody get tortured with one of those by the other nurse that was there, who didn't appreciate the attitude of one of the inmates. And so she just did the yuckiest, you know, just twisting and turning just to hurt her. And she was writhing in pain. So I decided next time that they ask me if I'm allergic to anything, I'm going to say, yes, I'm allergic to TB tests. So what they'll have to do if I'm allergic to them, then they'll have to give me a chest x-ray. So, ha ha ha, you know, I'm thinking of all these ways that I can make it very uncomfortable for them to be detaining me. And I'm going to educate as many people as I can to just stick it to the man, because this is just an abomination. And I remember when I walked into that jail, I was kind of not afraid, but I looked at, there was like about, I don't know, a handful or like 6, 7, 8, 9 inmates. And I just looked in there. I says, well, this is jail. I don't know what I thought I was going to get into, but maybe a bunch of dykes ready to rape me with a mop. And one of the girls laughed and she said, that's a 1970s Linda Blair movie. Actually,
it's not, because you weren't busted in Oklahoma, which has the highest per capita of women behind bars.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll discover if you dig that there's been a number of stories that have come out where they've said that not only has that happened in the jails, but the corrections officers, and in some cases, sheriff's department and the sheriff in the prison system. And you and I both know, having been knee deep, and quite literally, you know how awful that is, knee deep in this cop stuff and the cop lore, mm-hmm. is that the underreporting and the non-reporting of all of this. So every time I see a report like that, I think to myself, well, there's probably 1,000 silent folks out there.
Absolutely.
Who have been too afraid to come forward. And what really baffles me, Lily, is this. If you, YouTube, we're getting way off the subject, but I think it'll keep your audience interested in it.
Yes.
If you get on YouTube and you go to cop brutality, you go cop brutality women, there's hundreds, probably thousands of videos out there. And here's what I wonder. So you got a woman who goes in. There was one where this drunk woman was, she was DUI. They strip searched her by force. They abused her in a lot of ways that were just abominable. And I wonder, when these women do make it out of prison, what are their men folk doing about that?
Mm-hmm.
For instance, uncles, brothers, fathers, they just have to wait. But what are they doing about that, and why doesn't it happen? Or maybe that's happening, but that's not reported or underreported. But I think to myself, from a man's perspective, if any of that ever happened to any of my family members, but particularly to any of my, my female family members, there's something very primal about what I will want to do.
Yes.
If that happened. And I wonder why that doesn't happen. I also wonder why there isn't a larger backlash against them. But you and I both know, too, that cops are a global phenomenon, and that this abuse, this torture, this misuse, this aggrandizement of their office, authority under the color of law, all of this, there are tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of reported cases where they go over the line. You know, that's why I call it the thin black and blue line. It's not about criminality anymore. It's about obedience.
Exactly. Yes. And Bill, we're at the bottom of the hour. I need to go to a couple of minute commercial break. When I get back, let's
sure.
talk about the reparations that you proposed in your Aborigines American article. And
sure.
Axe Handle, somebody on the chat has posted this two or three times already. TL, ask Bill what he thinks about George Woodcock's Anarchism, A History of Libertarian Ideas and Movements. So when we get back, let's talk about
okay.
that. And in the meantime, I'm going to go to commercial break. You're listening to Tiger Lily. My special guest is Bill Buepert, founder of ZeroGov.com. Okay, we're back. You're listening to Tiger Lily on Tiger Lily's Freedom Roar. This is Freedomizer Radio, and my special guest is Bill Buepert, founder of ZeroGov.com, and we've been talking about this very compelling article that he wrote about the Aborigines Americans and how they should be the first ones to get the hell out of from under the federal government's thumb. But before that, I have somebody who's like a, I don't know, he's been bugging me. He wants to know what you think about some book, some anarchist book that I mentioned. Are you familiar with the book that I mentioned?
I am familiar with the book, and it's an older book, but the beef I have with it is that in the anarchy movement, there are what's called anarcho-capitalist, and I happen to be that, where I want a stateless society. Then you have anarcho-communalist, anarcho-communist, anarcho-socialist. I know that's hard to believe.
I know.
But if you go to Reddit, for instance, and you look under anarchy, the ANCAPs are by far the minority. And Woodcock spends a considerable amount of time talking about the violence of anarchists and talking about Bakunin, the Russian and such, and I really think he goes off on the wrong path. I think what he does is he goes down that anarchist path that's been followed by the black-clad, private property-destroying hipsters who were at the conferences in Seattle, the international conferences and such, and took it upon themselves, much like the Occupy Wall Street movement, to say, yeah, anarchism's cool as long as the government does the following things for us, as long as they pay off our student loans, give us a guaranteed minimum income, give us a guaranteed minimum wage. So they are not anarchist in the sense that I am. And I think you've even mentioned this in our conversations we've had. Well, the way I distinguish myself is that I'm an abolitionist. I believe in the removal of all fetters and chains from others, and that the only government that I advocate is self-government. And what I want to see done is the eradication of all human slavery. So I think that's more descriptive of where I'm at, and that would describe where my difference is with George Woodcock.
Okay. Well, I was, when I rode through New Mexico open carrying, I got kind of kicked out of a place very kindly, very nicely, and it was a small town called Datil, D-A-T-I-L, I think it's called something like that. And
yeah.
And the owners told me that it was against the law for me to be in there because they serve alcohol. And I says, well, I'm not in the restaurant part. And I thought it would be more like Arizona. You know, I'm not in the restaurant part. This is the convenience store where, you know, I get gasoline. And he says, no, anywhere that sells alcohol, you know. And I'm like, okay. So then I flagged down a cop in the next city over, town over. He didn't realize I had him completely. I was recording him the whole thing. And I protected him because he went off telling me about how bad the Albuquerque cops were, and that one of them just got fired for pulling over hot looking girls and giving them an ultimatum: you can either expose yourself to me or I'll give you a ticket, kind of a thing. And he got busted and they fired him. Yeah, so this is just going on. This is all over the country, especially the bigger cities and stuff. But I forgot why I started. Oh, so the open carry. So I posted something on the opencarry.org on the New Mexico forum, and
you and I both post there, as a matter of fact.
Oh, really? So have you seen any of my posts on there? That last one?
I have. Yes.
Really? And my husband posted something in there to say, oh, people don't understand Tiger Lily and da da da, and he says, oh, Lily, they really hate you. And I haven't looked to see, you know, but he says they really hate.
Yeah, they don't like me very much on there either.
Well,
so especially because I think that the open carry of rifles is also an important thing, and they don't pay attention to that.
Yeah, and there's such, oh my gosh, there's such, and it gets to the point where, you know, I just get frustrated with them, and I know I should be more professional, but I start calling them ladies. You know, and things like that. And they really hate me. And it's like, I'm ready to get booted out of that one, too.
In other words, they're women of both sexes. Is that what you're saying?
Not that there's anything wrong with that. You know, it's just that here they think they're all virile and, you know, they're, you know, but it's not so much. I'm not thinking they're that critical thinkers. They're just such sheeples. And I try to be nice and try to, you know, just ask questions and do what Stefan Molyneux says to do and everything. But even Stefan gets pissed off, you know,
he does, but he's exceptionally patient.
He is very, very patient, but one thing he says is if you're always pissed off, then you end up coming across as more of a slave than as a free person. You should live a free lifestyle, you know, like and exude liberty. And I think I do that by going around with my motorcycle and alternative headgear choices and my gun. So anyways, going back to your article.
Isn't it crazy, by the way, that Texas outlaws open carry? It's just crazy.
It's crazy. So much for these so-called badass cowboys, you know?
I know. And Oklahoma just legalized open carry. And I said, great. And this is another place where I was on open carry where they were not pleased with my response, because I said, but you have to have a license to open carry. And they said, so what? And I said, if you have to have a license to carry, you are living at the pleasure of law enforcement.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And on this,
so they can challenge you anytime they wish.
Yep. And that's the thing. I refuse to get a permission slip. So if I have to lock it up in Texas, I'll lock it up. And in the meantime, I'll exercise my open carry in Utah, Arizona, New Mexico, and any other place that lets me. California just stopped it. They criminalized that now.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyways, going back to your article, you were talking about, the tribes need to take the initiative by waging a soft revolution that refuses to accept any poison subsidy on the reservation land, and take some of the following steps. And you listed 13 of them.
And if your audience is interested in looking at those 13 right now, they can go to ZeroGov, and the essay is called Just Go Away, Why the American Indian Needs to Leave the United States Forever.
Okay, great.
And
I'll post that in the chat, too.
You know, also, if you look at my site from talking to me over the years, gosh, you and I have known each other for years now, Lily.
Yeah.
Is that secession is important to me. And the reason that secession is important to me is that not only for revolutionary purposes, but for evolutionary purposes, we have to come to the realization that bigger is not necessarily better, especially when it comes to a country.
Mm-hmm.
The larger the country, the more tyrannical they become over time. This is an historical fact. It is a state of nature. Yet, you and I both know, even right-wingers, especially the neocons, I think they're the ones who are most guilty of this, where to them, secession's a four-letter word, and they say, well, that's unpatriotic, and they'll go on with that kind of drivel. And then I can ask them, well, let me see, using some Molyneux techniques, let me see if I got this straight. You don't want to break up the United States because central planning works, bigger is better, and patriotically, you like the way things are right now. And usually they say, well, not exactly, but if we got the right people in Washington, you know, the usual bromides that have the intellectual veracity of something lying on its back at the bottom of a pond making furtive movements every moment or two. So I'll ask him, let me see if I got this straight. So you're saying the U.S. as it is good because the bigger government protects us. And they'll usually say, yeah. So how come you're against one world government then? Because if this idea of larger government is so good and it can't be reversed and you don't want to reverse, not only can it not be, but you don't want to take the initiative to do so through breaking up the U.S., then you would advocate for world government. And, of course, they go, oh, no. I wouldn't want world government. We'd be involved with the U.N. and stuff like that. To which I respond, well, you already are. I mean, you already do that. So the reason why the Aboriginal movement, what little there is left of it, like the Lakota Sioux 3 years ago under Russell Means saying, you know what, we're filing our divorce papers with the federal government. Now, nothing's happened to that. It's been much more symbolic than anything else because the usual suspects stepped in and probably made the proper threats and appeasements and subsidies to really neuter what Russell Means was trying to do. I want to find any means possible in this country for us to recognize that secession is not a four-letter word, that divorce is not bad.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Lily, if you or I or anybody, your friends and neighbors, find themselves in an absolutely horrendous marital relationship and they want a divorce and they want out, what the government's saying is that we're going to come to your house, and not only are you not getting the divorce, I'm going to screw a gun to your temple, and I'm going to tell you that if you attempt to divorce yourself from this person, who apparently is being evil to you or it's irreconcilable differences, we will find you, kidnap you, cage you, maim you, or kill you, depending on your degree of compliance.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that analogy is sort of correct?
It's absolutely correct. And that's what people don't understand.
They don't. and that's why I'm – because the violence we have visited on the American Aboriginals is reprehensible. But I have to say something here. I don't believe in the noble savage. I don't believe that American Aboriginals on their own, before we got here, while we were here, and while their numbers were diminishing, were kind to each other, kind to their victims. They participated in rape. They participated in their own genocide, visited upon other tribes. They, you know, torture as a ritual was especially a Plains tribe hobby, where they would do the most horrific things to people. So I'm not here saying, oh, wow, the noble savage. If only we could all be like, you know, the Aboriginal Americans. I'm not saying that at all. So I want people to be clear on that. But what I am saying is that everybody should be the captain of their own destiny. Everybody should be the master of their own fate. And the less government they have above them, the better. And if anybody has a scintilla of a legitimate grievance to go to the federal government and get world recognition for, it would be the Aboriginals and the reservation. So I use this as a philosophical and practical lever to get secession to become, I guess, kinder and gentler in the consciousness of Americans. So that would be the main motivation of why I wrote that particular essay.
And I love the way the term that you used, soft revolution, because all of your ideas are nonviolent. And I think if we just opened up our minds and opened up our hearts and became critical thinkers, there are ways to be to affect change without violence.
I agree. And you know what? But the thing is, we cannot be pacifists, and neither you nor I are pacifists, because I think that's a quick road to extinction.
Mm-hmm.
But what we are is we're very principled about the zero aggression principle and the non-aggression principle, which you and I believe in a society in which one of the main pillars is that you simply don't initiate violence against people, but if people initiate violence against you, you will respond in a fashion that will disincentivize their behavior, whatever that comes to in the context of the situation. So you know, you and I make a very large distinction between pacifism, which is usually a species of the left,
mm-hmm.
and the kind of vigorous self-defense that we look for. Because you and I both know, too, that if Austrian economics, or if you're familiar with that at all, if
yes.
it's taught us anything, it has taught us that incentives will tell you everything you need to know about why humans do what they do.
Right. I totally agree with that. And the one thing, I don't think I have the balls to kill anybody, you know, even in self-defense, because I've been in a situation like that when I was in the Marine Corps where it was life or death and I could have done something and I didn't because I just couldn't, I didn't have it in me to defend myself to the point that I would harm another human being. That said, I don't know if I would have the guts to do that if it was a loved one that was being violated, attacked, or hurt, or whatever.
I'm here to tell you that Tiger Lily would most definitely have the ovaries for that if one of her cubs were threatened.
Okay, good.
I have no doubt of that. I have no doubt of that.
But I'll tell you.
Have you not seen the vigor in the tiger eye in women who have family members threatened and what
yeah.
they do?
Yeah, it's
certainly there.
Yeah, I cannot imagine my grandchild who just turned 1 year old today, not absolutely, I don't know, coming unglued if I saw somebody hurting the child.
Well,
but,
look, you and I are responsible for your 1 year old grandson's horrible future and the horrible future that my children have in store for them. That's you and I, really. We're doing a little more than most,
yes.
but we haven't done the right thing because their future is going to be horrific.
I agree. That's sad. But, you know,
doing the right thing, and that's because we are creatures of moral cowardice.
Well, you know, I'm not the one thing that really has liberated me, because I'm very amazed at what Stéphane Molyneux does and how he talks about his job is pretty lonely. I mean, you don't really fit into normal society. And my job is, our job is lonely. But I feel like I can do whatever the hell I want to because my parents are dead. So I don't have anybody threatening to you know, expose me and humiliate me or whatever in front of my parents. And my children are grown and my husband totally supports what I do. So I can do things like very effective things, like get in the grill of cops and document it and ask them questions like, did you actually sign swear an oath to the Constitution and things like that, which I don't believe in the Constitution, but most people do. And so if I can get them to that one step to the Constitution, then it's like a building block, you know. Oh, okay. Well, did you sign the Constitution? Weren't half of the founders slave owners? And why did they have slaves? Oh, the Bible said it was okay. Oh, do you believe in the Bible? Well, yeah. Do you believe in all of it?
Lily, that's fascinating because my wife is a beat artist, and we were at a street fair, and during the street fair, I was helping her out, and the police had set up a display, and of course they had an armored vehicle there, and they had weapons out, and all the kids were just oohing and aahing. And I went up and spoke to some of the officers, and one of the questions I asked them is, I said, is there any, since you're sworn to uphold the law, is there any law that you won't uphold? And they said, no, we're going to do what we're told. So I said, let me get this straight. So I'm not wearing my seatbelt, and you stop me, and I refuse to put my seatbelt on. What are you going to do? Well, we're going to compel you to put it on. No, I'm going to lock my door. I'm going to roll up my window, and I'm going to refuse to put that seatbelt. As a matter of fact, I'm not even going to turn my car off. What are you going to do? We'll break the window. Well, I'm not coming out. What are you going to do? We'll drag you out. What if I resist? We'll do what we have for officers, what we have to do for officer safety. So I said, in the end, what you're willing to do, since you're willing to do what you're told and only what you're told, is that you're willing to murder one of your friends and neighbors or acquaintances over a seatbelt violation. And they got a little miffed at that because of the way I had, you know, followed the logic trail with them.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't, that's what they'll do because that's what they're, I sort of think that those people who become cops because they have either a bullying or a cowardly personality or such. I think I think there are certain psychopathic and sociopathic tendencies in anybody, and I put politicians in this same league, where those people who wish to push others around and to do it to such an extent that they're willing to put not their lives at risk, of course, but the lives of those people that they push around. Like, there was a detective in Oakland, I think this was 2 years ago or something like that. He was caught responding to a Facebook post where he was saying that open carriers in California should be shot. And he said it in this manner, and I'm paraphrasing. He said, yeah, if you find the open carriers, prone them out. You know, they love that term, prone them out. It gives them power, where the cops get you down on the ground. And he said, and wait for one of them to make a furtive movement and just shut them down. Well, yeah, this is their mindset. I mean, it's the 98% of cops who give the 2% good ones a bad name. Horrible. I know that I use this word. I probably use this word horrific all the time, or murderous, when I sound like a broken record, but it's hard for me to find a better descriptor. I mean, we're in a mess, Lily.
Mm-hmm. And I know when I write articles, I use those types of words, and my husband will initially would try to soften it up, but now he's like with me. He's like, yep, use it. There's no other term for what is going on when you investigate these crimes by these, like you call them, gangbangers in blue, who get away with it, get paid time off to murder citizens.
Look, even my local PD here in Southern Arizona, and we're trying to dig up the memo, but apparently there was a memo that read that every two stops or half of the stops that you make in traffic, you must issue a citation.
Wow.
I mean, it's like Miami Beach, when apparently they came out and the chief said, on this Memorial Day weekend, you will make 2,500 arrests, or whatever the number was. You know, shouldn't your goal be zero?
Yep.
Because when you make the goal 2,500, when you make that, that's a presumption of guilt. If you extend this logically, it's a presumption of guilt, so that when they stop you, they're going to find a way to either take money from you or end up kidnapping you and putting you in a cage, or, you know, whatever it leads to if you resist. Because, you know, you and I have seen the cartoons of cops with their batons raised high and they're 10 feet from a suspect and they're closing on him and they're screaming, stop resisting.
Yes. That cracks me up.
That's where we're at. We live in a police state.
Absolutely.
So, again, going back to our original point, we're always going around the block. But mm-hmm. I enjoy that, Lily. Thanks for indulging me.
Me too.
We're talking about the Aboriginals here, and I did make a variety of points, and the variety of points, if people read it, are everything from where the tribes would send a bill to the IRS insisting that 400 years of estimated taxes have been calculated, and they would expect remuneration for penalties and interest paid, to put teeth to the notion of kicking the feds out,
mm-hmm.
and that they declare all American firearms laws have no force within tribal boundaries,
mm-hmm.
they build an all-volunteer army to defend themselves. But most important of all in my mind is they would seek diplomatic ties with other nations and insist on a seat in the United Nations, similar to the consular activities of the extant Palestinian movement.
Mm.
And the importance of this, as facetious as I find the United Nations to be infatuous in their behavior, getting international recognition is critically important. In 1863 and 1864, during the War of Northern Aggression, the Confederacy was very, very close to getting British and French recognition of their sovereignty. If that had happened, Lincoln would not have had a choice but to seek conditional surrender, either himself or with the South, to cease hostilities. And we'd be in two nation states today or more. But
mm-hmm.
in my mind, you can't have enough nation states if that's what's going to take you down the devolutionary path. I was with Ernie Hancock the other day, who was a fellow anarchist, and he was poo-pooing my idea of a revolutionary and evolutionary secession, because he said, well, all you're doing is creating more nation states. And the point I was trying to make, though, was that under the Articles of Confederation, for instance, and I recently had a debate on that up in Yuma, Arizona, with the Articles, in 1783, when we sued for peace with the United Kingdom, the United States didn't come to the table in Paris. It was 13 separate nation states. And for 7 years in this country, and one can take it back to 13 years if you started in 1775, we had 13 different nation states here who actually had foreign relations with each other and actually conducted themselves in a peaceable manner. But we don't pay attention to that. And it's one of those black holes in American history where the only thing you're taught is the Articles of Confederation failed. Therefore, we had to have the Constitution. Mm. Well, it's a far darker and more self-interested history on the part of Washington and Hamilton than they let on. And a lot of that is coming out now, like the new Lincoln revisionism that you'll see on Lou Rockwell and such, where for the longest time, you know, you and I were taught when we were youths that Lincoln was, you know, he was God on earth.
Yep.
He freed the slaves. He did all these great things. But as you and I have learned, in all of our history in government school, we were lied to. From start to finish, from A to Z, from soup to nuts, we were lied to, because the entire history of the United States is about the aggrandizement of the federal government. And, of course, remember civics courses? What are civics courses in the end? Obedience to the state.
Yep.
That's what civics means.
Yes, yeah. Indeedy. And you mentioned China would be very interested if the Aborigines succeeded from the United States.
Well, I think China would. I think Russia would. I think a variety of other nations would be interested in that, because what they'd like to see is an end to federal imperial power around the globe and the mischief that we cause so many ways.
And I totally get what you're saying about by dismantling the feds, we'd have smaller governments. And smaller governments lead to more prosperity. And that's an evolution towards getting the – what we really need is no government, zero government, and zero gods, really. Because isn't – in my opinion, this whole even the Constitution and all of this stuff, we base morality on religion, and it shouldn't be based on religion, because there's so many different religions, and the farther removed a government gets from religion, the more fruitful that nation tends to be. Look at these, what are they, theocracy type of governments in the Middle East that they're all about, their government is so linked with Allah and all of that, and they have these, what is it, the Sharia law, and they've got all of these things that really do not promote liberty at all. So that's what we need to do, don't you think?
You know what, I don't know if I have a whole lot of opinions on that, because I happen to be agnostic and not an atheist, and I do see the harm that religion does, especially when it's when it's connected to the government. So I don't doubt any of what you're saying, but I would tell you that the secular religion of the state is just as dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
This cop fetishism, the state worship, the government supremacism, the people who in this mortal coil, whatever their religious premise may be, suppose that, well, the government will make things better for us. I mean, look at have you talked to any of the Occupy Wall Street people?
No.
Oh, my God. You won't do it for long, because in the end, all they're seeking is a larger government that has more extractive tentacles into more wallets and more of people's time and resources so that they can get a free ride. That's what it really comes down to. But then again, that's what a lot of the collectivists on both the left and the right seek, is they seek this kind of society in which the government steps in to equilibrate things, to redistribute, to distribute the wealth, to make sure that justice is there. And as you and I have learned, and I've spoken about this on your program, because I had a family member get entangled in the legal system, it ain't about justice.
Nope.
It is not about justice. It's about a legal system that not only puts so many families in the hazard, because families serve time, whether they're in jail or not, when their loved ones are in jail. That's what we discovered, and that's probably something that you may have discovered, because I can't think of a family whose family hasn't been touched, either extended or nuclear, by some kind of brush with the law in which fining or caging or worse resulted. You know, that's why, to a certain extent, Lily, whenever there's a vehicle stopped by a cop and I see that on the side of the road, I think to myself, another convert.
Yep.
So the way they're being treated right now, I think, oh, good.
But
I didn't have to do it.
I'm not as optimistic as you, Bill, because from what I see on these forums, people are saying things like, well, I had it coming because I was speeding. Well, no, you didn't have it coming because you were speeding. There shouldn't be speeding laws. I mean, there are limits.
Amen.
You know,
yeah.
You didn't have it
Amen.
Coming. So people are like, oh, well, yeah, I broke the law. And so they're so indoctrinated into believing that they had it coming. And it just makes me want to pull the last bit of hair that I got left on my head. Oh, because it's all coming out because I go 100 miles an hour on my motorcycle with no helmet, especially if there's no helmet requirement. And it's like all coming off, you know, so. And I don't care, but so I'm not that optimistic.
Well, as a matter of fact, I'll be speaking on Secession and Pork Fest. I'm one of the there's two keynote speakers there. It's going to be myself and Stefan Molyneux. I've got Friday night. Stefan's got a Saturday night, and I'm going to talk about secession. So I'll be and of course, for the most part, I'll be preaching to the choir, but. I'm hoping to make it a speech of merit.
But, you know, preaching to the choir is important to do sometimes because it's so exhausting to not preach to the choir and to try to finesse your way and try to find ways to get your message across and not be insulting because maybe you could get one or two converts out of 200, you know. So you need to fill your spirit by preaching to the choir sometimes to talk to like-minded people. Is Rose Larkin going to be there?
Oh, Larkin Rose
will
be there. Yes, I'm so looking forward. Have you had him on your show yet?
I haven't because I don't know how to get a hold of him. I've tried to get a hold of him through
channel. I will take care of that for you.
Oh, I love you, man. That would be so great. And
yeah.
I haven't reached out to Stefan Molyneux yet because I don't know. He has a Sunday show.
Remember, all he can do is say no.
This is true. So, and I know he's been
on. But I'm sure Larkin will come on your show. And Larkin released a video recently about it was a. You've seen Stefan Molyneux's video on the story of human enslavement.
Yes, this one rivals it.
This
it
is
was
sort
awesome.
Of a follow-on to that that Larkin had produced, where he shows how a slave plantation, where the slaves are freed but they have to come back to work on the slave plantation, don't find themselves any better off. And he does it in a you know, that's one of Larkin's brilliances is that he can really take what seem like complex narratives and turn them into something rather simple for everyone to apprehend. And he makes a really good case for why essentially the state of nature we are in now in these United States, and I would say globally, is that these are forms of slavery. They're not chattel slavery necessarily, but tax slavery, regulatory slavery, and that kind of lack of freedom. I mean, you and I both know that if you are stopped by a cop, despite what they say about your rights, you essentially don't have any.
Right.
And if you don't have a recording device on you or on your vehicle, you're pretty silly.
Mm-hmm.
And you should resolve that as soon as possible. I mean, that's another thing I would urge your audience to do is we're exploring options to install those kind of either 360 or 180 videos in all of our vehicles of the family for that very reason. As a matter of fact, not only that, I've published a card, and I'll send you some of them, for my friends and neighbors to give to their children that they hand to a law enforcement officer and say, what it reads is, I will not talk to you, and I cite the law on the back, and their parents' telephone number and the attorney's telephone number is there. And basically what the children are doing is they're going to give them the silent treatment once they give this card to them, and the officers are compelled to call the parents right away.
Oh, that's wonderful, because these kids are
so
being tortured in school.
I'll send you several of those.
That'll be wonderful.
Yeah,
I interviewed a young lady who's...
Schools are prisons. Government schools are prisons.
It's outrageous what's going on, and there's school cops, and they'll take their backpacks and search them willy-nilly, and it's just they're out of control. And I interviewed this young lady...
It's also conditioning. I mean, that's another reason why we have the TSA. It's all about conditioning. It's all about making it so that when you are stopped by uniformed authority with a gun, you will submit, because that's what they want most of all is the submission and the obedience and the yes sir, no sir, and all the rest of that. Eric Peters just wrote a brilliant essay a couple of weeks ago on why he's so sick of that.
Yep. And I got to go to commercial break. I just want to say one thing about the recording stuff. I have been known to just flat out to deceive those people in the gangbangers. What I do is have my phone, and sometimes if I ran out of batteries or whatever, I pretend that I'm Ustreaming. So they think that, and I say, well, I should be getting a call from my husband anytime soon if he's watching this on live stream, you know. And so that puts them on their best behavior. And so it's a lot of tricks to it, you know, because I know you're not supposed to lie to them. So I don't lie. I just make little comments that totally deceive them and put them on notice that your actions will be held accountable, dude.
Well, and remind me to send you a copy of Holder's 11-page memo to the Baltimore PD, and of course this extends to everybody, on why the recording of their activities in public cannot be prosecuted and cannot be stopped.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I've got.
I'm amazed that it happened out of this administration, but
yeah, me too.
I'll send that to you.
That would be awesome. So I'm going to mute us, and we're going to go to commercial break, and we'll be back in
two. Okay.
You're listening to Bill Buepert, founder of ZeroGov.com on Freedomizer Radio. I'll be back in two. Thank you for tuning in, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in and staying with us. You're listening to Tiger Lily on Freedomizer Radio. My special guest is Bill Buepert, founder of ZeroGov.com. We were talking about a myriad of things, but trying to stay focused on a really compelling article that he wrote that you can find on his blog, ZeroGov.com. And it's about how the Indians, the American, the Native Americans, or he calls them Aborigines Americans, ought to be seceding from the United States. And he's got a number of really creative ways to do that, which don't involve violence. And it's a very insightful, thoughtful article, and that's why I just love to listen to him. Tell us more about the Porcupine Festival that you're going to be speaking at. How did that get started? And
The Porcupine Festival happens with the Free State Project, and the Free State Project takes place in two places, in Wyoming, where Boston Tea Party broke off his own little splinter group from Free State Project, and then there's one in New Hampshire. The one in New Hampshire is a little bigger, and what they're trying to do is get 10,000 or more libertarian, anarchist, minarchist-focused people there to establish a critical mass of voters who will take over the state legislature and change the way they do their business. And the talk that I'm going to give on Friday of the week they're having it in June is going to be on why they need to take the next step and consider secession altogether, and not simply staying within this system and changing one state, but becoming a nation state to themselves, and then maybe becoming a beacon to the world on how it's done right when it comes to individualism and freedom and liberty and such.
Cool. Very nice. And I wanted to talk also about this. You always have some really great responses, kind of like Stefan Molyneux, and about how to deal with people when they're the New Mexico gun Facebook. I went to New Mexico and I was open carrying and I got kicked out. And so I did a little YouTube on that, and it really pissed some people off because they're like, how dare you come into our state and disrespect our cop, you know? And I really didn't disrespect him at all. I just kind of poked fun at him afterwards. But, you know, at the time, I'm of course very respectful. He didn't know anything, but, there was this guy who posted an article that really pissed me off, and then they said something like a certain person ought to read it, which I know they were referring to me. And the name of the article is something about nonviolent dispute resolution open carry edition. And it starts off with many arguments, fights, and even wars are started because somebody didn't communicate their needs well. Sometimes this is simple. Express your needs directly instead of assuming the other person or people know or should know what you want or what you want or what is wrong. But that what you want is wrong. Let's see. So it says redirect negative behavior with LEAPS, and LEAPS stands for listen, empathize, ask questions, paraphrase, summarize. So he's really, so this is an article that's talking to the open carriers that we should be listening to the cops, empathizing with them, asking them questions, paraphrasing and summarize. And then is they say apply nonviolent dispute techniques to LEO encounters, and then the ID question card, and it says they he advocates going ahead and just, you know, just show them your ID. What's the big deal? And every time somebody says something like that, it just rings of Nazi World War II. Just put your damn Star of David on. How bad, you know, what's the big deal? That's, there's no harm in that. And I wonder how many of Jews were like, I don't know, wondering what the harm was as they were getting tossed into the oven, you know? So,
well, it's Jews, it's gypsies, it's homosexuals,
everything.
It's Slavs, it's, you know, they weren't the only accredited victim group. But I think what's more analogous to what we see in America is Vichy France during the early, from 1940 to 1945, 44 when they were finally liberated by the Allies and living under the National Socialist occupation for that period of time, because you had the Vichy government, and the Vichy government were Francophone and French nationals who collaborated actively with the government. As a matter of fact, the Germans did not have the manpower to seize the Jews, Slavs, Gypsies, and all the other accredited victim groups that they were trying to neutralize. So they used the French nationalists and the French nationals to do that very thing for them. We see the same thing happening here with the war on drugs. So many people, for instance, my wife and I, we had to go through a suspicionless checkpoint here that's administered by the Border Patrol.
Ugh.
It's an immigration checkpoint, mm-hmm. but they always have their dog there. Now, why is the dog there? It's, the dog's not there because Mexicans smell different than Americans. The dog is there to look for drugs. So again, we have a suspicionless checkpoint with the BP, where ostensibly it's about immigration, but you and I both know it's about the war on drugs. The reason the government loves the war on drugs is because when they conduct that war, it demands a transparency of every human behavior in society. Well, if you've got more money, that means that we need to have the capability to make every bank in America a non-funded IRS field office, just so we can keep track of how people are spending, looking at irregular habits. And by the way, your Fourth and Fifth Amendment protections, because we can use the drug war, can be violated on a daily or hourly basis by dogs.
Yep.
If they don't have the reasonable articulable suspicion or the probable cause, all they have to do is bring a dog, and they use the drug war as a proxy to, you know, do what cops do, which is trying to cage you, trying to do the wrong thing with you as an individual. I think in the end, when people submit to that conditioning, and that's my objection to what you were describing earlier when they said showing your ID and that kind of thing, it's just like going through TSA checkpoints. If you don't object and make them uncomfortable about what they do, then they're going to continue to do it, and they'll make it worse.
Yep. And that's what my friend David Stillwell, the founder of Guerrilla Lawfare, he says, I'll be damned
that
if I get...
That guy's awesome, by the way.
He is. Thank you. He's my best friend. I stay at his place whenever I go to Las Vegas to do my activism. But he says, if I'm going to get thrown into the oven, I'm going to give him a black eye first. You know? So he cracks me up. But yeah, he is awesome. And that really irks me. Where people say, just do it. What can it hurt? Well, it's going to hurt our children and grandchildren. And right now we have less liberties, much fewer liberties than we did even a generation ago. And are the most incarcerated population on the planet, as evidenced by the 7 million or so that are either on jail probation and parole and all of that. And Stefan Molyneux said that 4/5 of those incarcerated are there for victimless so-called crimes. So I haven't seen the source for that, and I haven't, you know, really worked hard to find
it. No, he's right. And 82% of all the inmates in federal facilities are there for nonviolent offenses. And, of course, most nonviolent offenses, except for crimes like burglary against property, are victimless crimes, essentially. But the drug war swells the ranks, but as I mentioned earlier about the drug war, the government loves the drug war because it also allows them to militarize their police. And it also allows them to use the canard that really makes my head explode, which is officer safety.
Ugh.
You know, I've written about that in the past, and you and I have talked about it a little bit. But what officer safety boils down to is that cops, this Praetorian Guard for the government, their lives are more precious than ours,
mm-hmm.
than the people they are supposedly chartered to protect. That's what it all comes down to.
Right. And remember Rick Perry out of he was running for president out of Texas. He's the governor
yes.
of Texas
uh-huh.
or something.
Yeah.
And I downloaded this. I uploaded this little clip from one of those, what do they call it when they ask questions, the debates. And somebody asked him about the high rate of capital punishment. And everybody's cheering. All these Republicans are just cheering like it's something out of a lion's den biblical times. Like, yay, they got the most death people that they kill. You know, it's like, and then he said, well, if you come to our state, we need to send a message to people that if you come to our state and you kill one of our officers or kill one of our children. So he is equating valuing their police officers with the value of a child. How insane is that? And nobody caught that. Nobody on mainstream media even caught that. So I air that every now and again just to give people an idea of how indoctrinated we are and how very badly the Texas is an absolute police state. It's just horrific what goes on here. I did not know.
Yes, it is.
So,
and very high property taxes, by the way.
Oh,
you know,
really?
They brag about not having an income tax. They'll get you any which way they can. And then the thing about open carry just it baffles me. But,
right.
You know, that's what they do. Yeah, you know, the death penalty, you and I could do a show on that. But I think, you know, from reading my writings, I'm absolutely opposed to the state-imposed death penalty,
mm-hmm.
no matter how egregious the crime.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you give the government the ability to execute its own citizens, and what you've done is you've given them carte blanche
mm-hmm.
to inculcate murder as a methodology by which they rule,
right.
as we've had since 2002 and torture.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I feel the same. And quite frankly, if I were in prison for life and I was given the option of life or get killed, I'd rather just, you know, just shoot me up and let me go. You know, like the dogs go, you know, it's like I don't want to be in prison. And a lot of people, I totally understand when Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me death. That's exactly how I feel, Bill. Liberty is more
yes.
important than living as a slave, and that's how I feel that we are slaves in America.
Well, what the government is full of blunderers and incompetence, and as brilliant as they appear to be in their conditioning, they're missing out on one important item, and maybe they're aware of this, maybe they're not, but Solzhenitsyn said, and I'm paraphrasing, once you take everything from a man, then he is at his most dangerous point because he has nothing to lose. And that's where they're driving us right now. And I don't think they understand the magnitude of the blowback that's going to occur in the future as a result of this.
Well, that's a good segue into me promoting Bill Scott's book. He's writing a book. It's on thepermit.blogspot.com, and every week he does a chapter. Bill Scott is the father of Eric Scott, who was murdered by the Las Vegas pigs at a fancy Costco in the fancy part of Las Vegas. And Eric Scott was a West Point graduate, 38 years old. Not that that matters. What matters is the fact that he is somebody who got awakened, and he's like a sleeping giant. And he's writing this book, and he's on chapter 9, I think. And he is taking it to a direction that I had not imagined. That he's so creative and brilliant in the way he's writing his book, and he's doing exactly what you're talking about, how this cannot be sustained much longer, this tyranny, and people are waking up, and more people are waking up to the brutality of a loved one being executed and the executioners getting away with it, like in the Jose Guerrera case where he was accused, tried, judged, and executed, sentenced and executed right in, you know, in 2 seconds. and that can't go completely.
Well, as a matter of fact, but the one thing I have to thank him, the one thing that Gorenya gave us, though, Lily, is that that's where you and I linked up at the Oathkeeper seminar.
Yep.
I wouldn't have known you otherwise. So.
That's for sure. And I tell everybody that your speech was by far the best speech of everybody who spoke there. It was just so awesome. You were there. You gave some statistics. And my husband's nudging me with his elbow. Oh, you're going to want to hook up with that one. You know? Oh, hell yes.
Well, you're very kind.
And yeah, very, very articulate and just right. And because, and I remember you said, I've been listening to people saying that it's not the police, it's the policies. I'm here to say bullshit. It's the police. I'm like, "Whoa, somebody nailed it and wasn't afraid to do it." Wow. So that was awesome.
Well, I mean, I have to say though, since then, Lily, I don't think that I was the origin of it. I hope I was a contributor, but since that time, you've been far more vigilant and aggressive about getting in the face of what I would call speaking truth to tyranny and just waving your recorder in the face of the thin black and blue line and doing the right thing. And if more people did that, great. I mean, for instance, imagine, Lily, if every time somebody got a speeding ticket, they went to court every time.
Yes.
If every time a cop stops somebody on the side of the road, half a dozen cars come to a stop, they all get out of their cars and they start recording the event from all directions.
Mm-hmm.
Every time.
Mm-hmm.
Every time. Or they listen to police scanners, and every time the cops go to an address to make a bust or something like that,
mm-hmm.
half a dozen cars or a dozen people show up with cameras, and they start photographing. You want to talk about putting the brakes on authoritarianism. That would go to a great extent. But you know what? Everything people need to see of why cops are bad, YouTube has done that service for us. Go to police brutality, and you can find legions of videos there that will just make your blood boil.
Yep. So let's see, we've got about, gosh, we just have about 3 minutes left, and I just wanted to finish up this thing on the open carry in New Mexico with that article where the guy is telling people to make friends with the cops. If you're an open carrier, make friends with them. Don't make their jobs any harder than it has to be. And then he talks about the benefits. First, you can network and make new friends. Like, I want a pig as a friend? I don't think so. If you're into self-defense and firearms, let's face it, police officers are good people to know, yada, yada, yada. So anyways, these people on this Facebook, they were like sucking each other's, you know what, back and forth. Oh, good post, Dusty. I can think of someone that needs to read it besides me. And I know he's talking about me. And then somebody said, wow, yeah, what a great post. You're very eloquent, blah, 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 blah. And so I wrote this. I'll admit I couldn't stomach getting through the entire article. For one, activists already know that they are going to be considered as fringe-dwelling jerks by cops, and those activists should be prepared for the unexpected at all times. No need for activists to get emotional. They're typically in it to promote liberties by educating our public servants. But more importantly, this article reads as if we the sheeple should cower to the man that we pay. The article makes it appear as though we the sheeple are subservient to cops. The fact is, they are subservient to us. It is they that need the lessons on how to defuse a crazy citizen or how to deal effectively with an activist. I'm a little ashamed of you ladies with the pom-poms ready to cheer on what appears to be written by a cop telling us the sheeple how to behave. So I just had to throw that in there because I was nice, Bill. I was as nice as I could, but it's like, that's it. These girls need to learn a lesson.
No, there's only so far that you can go in being kind to collaborators, because that's frankly what it is.
Yep.
I mean, what they're basically saying is that this is the system we live in. You shouldn't fight it. You should submit to the conditioning, and you should learn to love it. I mean, what they're basically saying is that it's that same old tired nostrum about rape. Well, just lay back and enjoy it. No.
Right.
No, do not go into that night
Right. And then they like to say, well, if you don't like the laws, then you need to vote in the right people and blah, blah, blah. Well, you know what?
Oh, spare me.
Poor slob, you know, I've been there. I rode twice, 580 miles to Carson City from Las Vegas to meet all of my representatives before I even met, I think it was even before I met you, Bill. And I realize it's just a cesspool of corruption and blank sucking each other. And it's just whoever's got the money, that's who's going to win, you know, and this is BS. And now I'm all about exposing. And that is so effective when you expose on YouTube. Did you see my YouTube about the judge that I exposed, that he had an opinion about helmets? And I said, opinions are like do, 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 do. And it says, OMG, dog butt looks like Jesus. You know, I that one got me kicked out of a Facebook activism group, motorcycle activism group.
Yeah. I agree.
So anyways, thank you so much, Bill. I'm down to my last few seconds. Thank you so much for being my special guest. And I look forward to another time because you always enlighten us. And thank you to my listeners also. You've been listening to Tiger Lily on Tiger Lily's Freedom Roar. This is freedomizerradio.com. And I got to hang up, Bill, because make way for the next show host, Druana's Illuminating Minds. Thanks, Bill. Bye.
Hey, thanks. Goodbye.